I just feel like I've been around the block, ripping up fantasy stock, working around the clock. Look at the view from the top. Researching rookies a lot? No, I just be listening to pods, yeah. One in particular, I'm just a messenger, let me just pass on the rock. Browning, Brunning, Bruning, pronouncing ain't what he's doing. What he's doing is not losing, but infusing you with new things. And there's Dennis the Bennett, yeah. The man is a menace, yeah. Building a dynasty, some of the finest things, promise you, you won't regret it. Sly as a fox, cultured in pop, give him his props. Here is a thought, here is a box, and you cannot compare him at all, so don't even try. Careful with the news, but when you use a take, I take up Tony Fire, I mean Dyer, because anyone else is a huge mistake. Whoa, fantasy round table, fantasy round table, yeah. Fantasy round table, come take a look at the crown, baby. Hey, fantasy round table, fantasy round table, fantasy round table, come take a look at the crown, baby. Go.
All right. What is going on, everybody? It is me and Matt. We are back with you guys here again today on this beautiful Tuesday. Week one is officially in the books. We finished up our last two games last night with the Steelers and the Giants and the Titans and the Broncos. Matt has got Von Miller there swinging by. He's got, you know, unfortunately with the injury, nothing better to do than to hang out and talk some fantasy football with us there. But we will be talking, recapping Monday Night Football and doing waiver wires, a little bit of possibly what we got wrong in our rankings. I forgot to do this on Monday's episode, so I will not forget to do this today. We are brought to you guys by Thrive Fantasy. We are partnered with them. You guys can join by going on there and entering the promo code GEEK right down there on the bottom of the screen. You guys enter $20, you will get $20 back. So we are thrilled to be a part of that. Jump on and join them. It's a great daily fantasy site. We're also part of the Drive-In Podcast Network. You can find us and a ton of other great podcasts, including those on music, movies, and pop culture, all on the MusicCityDriveIn.com website, as along with a link to our Discord channel where you have me, Matt, Dennis, Tony, and the guys over at the Debbie Delight, Ricky Valero, and Chris Stoops, giving you guys as much fantasy advice that we can. So jump in there. It's been a lot of fun so far. We do have a lot of fun in there, and it's all fantasy football, a little bit of nonsense and us kind of ribbing on each other. But Matt, obviously Monday night's second game did not go quite the way you wanted it to. So how is your Tuesday going for you?
Well, you know, I'm catching up to feeling the way you probably felt a little bit yesterday, except for, you know, both of us are early risers for our job, or at least in part me for my wife's job. So I knew I was getting up at 5 a.m. this morning, and I knew that today was going to be my 13 and a half hour day at work. So as the game pushed past 11:30 p.m., I was like, well, at least we're still up. You know, it's looking, and that last 2 minutes when I'm looking, it's like 11:45 p.m. And I realized that Vic Fangio is not familiar with the concept of a timeout.
Yeah.
And they're going to like either throw a touchdown or kick a field goal. I mean, the idea that he would miss a fourth field goal. So, you know, I'm also in my bedroom where my wife's been asleep for quite a while. And having previously, as I mentioned, woken her up with a constructive criticism, excited utterance toward the TV, I was sort of pacing at the end of the bed, watched the field goal, watched the worst attempt at moving the ball down the field for 17 seconds in the history of the world, turned off the TV, stared out the window, and tried to put myself to sleep.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say, I feel like I would understand your pain Thursday night, because I, you know, we talked about this a little bit yesterday. I think that might be a good get well game for the Cincinnati Bengals, unfortunately. But I took off Friday because I did not want to be pissed off, because I know what's going to happen if the Browns lose Thursday is I will be so pissed off I won't be able to sleep. And then I'm going to be sitting there at 2 o'clock in the morning and realize, well, I got to get up in an hour, so I might as well just stay up and be pissed off all day. So I just went ahead and took off. I was like, you know what? I got time to burn. Let's just take off Friday. We could be miserable all by ourselves here and not have to worry about waking anybody up. But the Broncos game was the second game. I actually thought both games were fairly interesting. Now, I didn't get to finish watching the Titans-Broncos game last night. I made it to about halftime before I went to sleep. But Steelers-Giants was a good game as well. The Steelers won that one 26-16. Big Ben finishes the week as QB 11 with 22 points. Benny Snell Jr. comes in and has to play for an injured James Conner. He finishes his RB 21 with 11 points. Juju looks like himself again with Ben back at quarterback. He finishes his wide receiver 7 with 24 points and 2 touchdowns in that one. And then James Washington is the other guy, the other wide receiver that kind of has a good game. Wide receiver 35 with 11 points. You know, it was good to see Juju back there. We were both guys who were very high on him last year. We had him on a lot of teams, and I do think that a lot of it was just the fact that they didn't have Big Ben. So I would imagine you're going to see a little bit of a reemergence from Juju this year, so I was excited to see that. I think it's not easy for me to like players on the Steelers, but I think Juju is easily one of my favorite players in the NFL. I just love the energy he brings. He really plays the game like a kid does. And then I don't know if you saw it. There was a, I don't think it was on Twitter. I saw it on Instagram. There was a video that was released today by SportsCenter where he just bought some food and everything for a homeless man. And there was no way he knew that that person was recording him doing it. Like, that's what I love about Juju. He just seems, he's a guy, the people, it seems like. I know he loves video games and all this stuff. So I'm a big fan of his. So it's good to see him back. But are you worried a little bit about Diontae Johnson? I know we try not to overreact too much after 1 week, and he did get 11 targets, I believe, in the game, but just did not produce much. And he was the guy this year that a lot of people were predicting to be kind of that breakout star for the Pittsburgh Steelers offense.
So a couple things for me. First, Diontae Johnson's kind of breakout and emergence last year came after the second week.
Yep.
So he didn't, you know, that wasn't an emergence with Ben Roethlisberger, and it was after injury with Juju Smith-Schuster. I think especially in week one with no actual game reps, it makes sense to me that Ben, when he was kind of wheeling around, was looking for the familiar. You know, he tried to force feed Connor a couple times before he got knocked out. He saw him put the ball at Juju. He's played a couple of years with Washington. It wasn't that surprising that he kind of went there. We saw him try to put one to Vance McDonald. Wasn't, you know, always the greatest. He was trying to spread around. The other thing, which I made some comments in our Discord, like when I was watching the first quarter, the first thing that came back to me is we forgot in all this time waiting for Ben to come back what road Ben is sometimes like. Yeah. And I think we saw a steady dose of road Ben. I even made a joke, which I was so close to actually copying to put it on Twitter, when he hit Juju for the touchdown. I was like, oh, I better wipe it out. I was like, no one loves Mason Rudolph more than Ben Roethlisberger, who's apparently trying to make us miss him with this first quarter, because he looked out of sorts. He looked a little slow. He looked a little slow to react. But the guy hasn't played football in about a year, you know, and he's been rehabbing with his arm. They have changed some of their offensive pieces a little bit. So I think it'll come. I would be encouraged that Johnson got 11 targets. I think it'll be interesting. They have Denver at home this week. AJ Boye, which we'll probably get to in a minute, he dislocated his shoulder. It popped out a joint when he landed last night. That's why he came out. They said he's highly doubtful for following game, which means Ben making his home debut with a little bit of game action underneath him is going to face a secondary that has Bryce Callahan, who's played one game in 2 years, and two rookies.
Yeah, and we should mention that there was a point where there was a lot of talk that Ben might be coming out. He had that big sleeve on his elbow to help keep it warm, and Mason Rudolph started warming up on the sidelines. So that is something else that we probably could have looked at a little bit with, especially that way that first – it was almost like the first half altogether Ben did not look good. He did start to turn it on a little bit in the second quarter, but, yeah, he definitely looked uncomfortable out there, and some of that may have just been – like you just mentioned, he hasn't played football in almost an entire year.
Well,
like,
he grabbed his knee a couple of times, which was a little bit of a concern, especially he had one where he had kind of a scramble, which he's never been the most graceful running quarterback, but he's looked better than he did on that run. And him, they repeatedly watched him grabbing his knee. So I don't know. We have to remember, he's 38. We've seen Rivers kind of fall off. Eli Manning retired. Those three were the three kind of big rookie QBs that came in together.
Yep.
I know, at least for me, I tend to forget, I guess, a little bit how many years, how much mileage, how much wear and tear Ben had on his body.
Yeah, and if Ben is hurt, I'm sure he will let us know here any day now when he has his press conference, because he does love to let us know when he's hurt. We obviously, there is a discussion that needs to be had around Connor and Snell, but we're going to save that for the waiver wire stuff, because that the Snell talk is going to be huge for especially everybody in their waiver wires, which I'll have a question for you later on that too, because I'm have an issue with one of my leagues in that, and I don't like the way the commissioner is handling it. So I'm interested to hear your opinion on this as well. On the Giants side, Daniel Jones finishes his QB 16 with 19 points. Barkley has a just horrible day here. RB 37 with just 6 points, and Darius Slayton finishes wide receiver 5 with 28 points. Barkley, I think you just kind of throw it away. I mean, the Steelers defense has the Steelers defense is one of the best defenses in the NFL. It's in all honesty why when we talk about our rankings, you'll see that all of us were wrong on Darius Slayton because they have such a good secondary as well. I don't think any of us were expecting a huge game like that. I just think they knew they needed to stop Barkley, and I think that's what they kind of focused in on. And that offensive line looked bad last night. I mean, I don't know how many times it looked like Saquon was getting hit in the backfield as soon as Daniel Jones snapped the ball or got the ball from the center. So I'm just kind of wiping that away a little bit from Barkley. He did show a little bit on a couple big plays, couple good runs. He had that one, I think it was a pass play where he ended up hurdling two people on the same play. That was actually kind of fun to watch. But with Darius Slayton, is he kind of stepped up to be the guy for you? So last year he scored, I believe, in the last 6 games, and he's the only player in the past – what was the stat? I wish I could remember. That has four games with multiple touchdowns. So, I mean, he's been on fire since coming into the league here last year. Again, didn't do much the first half of the season, but has been on fire here the second half, and then again has the big game last night.
Yeah, and it's – he definitely had a great performance. What I reflected on early – it seemed like they were trying to force the ball into Shepard and to Ingram, and those guys either couldn't get open or looked rusty and were struggling. Tate was also out.
Yeah.
They tried to force it down a lot to Barkley. It's almost like finally like, well, I guess we'll just try to throw it to Slayton and see what happens. And, of course, he gets, you know, his first touchdown was a huge over-the-top play. It felt like a little bit of a broken coverage. So is it, you know, is it just a continuation? Or is it the same kind of thing we talked a little bit about with Robbie Anderson yesterday? They were peppering a lot of different guys with targets, and he's the one that got a couple of big plays.
Yeah, I'm interested. It's not he's not someone that I think I'm necessarily starting every week, but he's working his way up that point for me, because I agree with you. That first one, I don't remember exactly. I have to go back and look at it, because I remember the play happening, but I was more like, as I was watching, I was like, God, that was a beautiful throw by Daniel Jones. Like, I didn't really see if there was a break in the coverage or anything.
Well, and they definitely seem to have a rapport, which is something that would be kind of in his favor, and that was probably partly due to injuries last year. So many of the Giants pass catchers were missing. He's probably the one Daniel Jones is most comfortable with, and that can end up having it rise to the top.
Yeah, and I was to say the one unfortunately bad part too was the interception that he threw when he was getting hit by Bud Dupree. It looked like that's who he was looking for. Slayton was the one that was in the back of the end zone. Now, he was covered by like four Steelers, so I don't think that was getting completed anyways, but it does look like he tends to look for Slayton down the field, and Jones has the arm and the accuracy to do that. So I think I don't even want to say it was more even of a Tate being out, because Tate works in the completely opposite part of the field. He's going to work more toward the line of scrimmage and everything, kind of where they were forcing the ball in earlier, like you had mentioned, to Shepard and Ingram. But I would like to see what Slayton looks like once Tate comes back. But he is a guy that I'm starting to, especially in deeper leagues, if I'm starting more than one flex, he might be a guy that I'm willing to throw my flex spot every single week. Because with the way that Giants defense looked in the secondary at times against Pittsburgh, now again, Pittsburgh is one of the better teams in the league. I think they might be down more often than not, so they're going to have to throw the ball. And I think that might mean it's going to end up going to Slayton more than anybody else.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the part I'm wondering about. It seemed like the Steelers correctly thought some of the same things that we thought going in, that they were going to try to get Shepard and Ingram and Barkley involved. And they tried to do that, and the Steelers were all over that. It seemed like it ended up being that Slayton had the best matchup. When I just looked at targets, he got 9, Barkley got 9, 7 for Ingram, 6 for Shepard. I think they kind of went away, went towards Slayton because that was the one part that was working. It will be interesting to see, based on this, do defenses change what they're keying on? They're always going to key on Barkley, I feel like, because that's the nature of it. But it looked like the Steelers really were expecting them to try to go to the tight ends and were really locking that down. So that didn't work. And that they were all over Shepard, and Slayton ended up being the guy with the favorable matchups. Does that continue? Does the rapport continue? I would tend to, based on what we've seen, he's the one I would probably be rostering, but I'm a little bit like you. I don't know if I have 100% confidence to start him, depending on my options.
All right, so Titans Broncos, we will rely heavily on Matt for this one. As he mentioned, he unfortunately miserably stayed up all night to watch it. I only made it through halftime, so I did not see all of this go down. Ryan Tannehill finishes as QB 16 with 19 points. Derrick Henry, RB 15 with 13 points. Corey Davis, wide receiver 17 with 17 points. A.J. Brown, just wide receiver 53 with 8.9, though I am told that he missed out on a big play in this one. And then Jonnu Smith, my tight end sleeper on the week, tight end 8 with 13 points. So I did like that he got involved, saw that he got both of Ryan Tannehill's touchdowns.
I thought one of the other tight ends got a touchdown.
No, I believe it was Jonnu Smith on both of them. I could have been wrong, but when I looked at it, I thought it said he had both touchdowns. Because I was excited for that. Because I think I had him at like 10 or 11 this week. And
yeah, and they were definitely looking for tight ends.
I will.
Michael Pruitt got the other touchdown.
Oh, okay. So then he only got one. Okay. Yeah. I really thought that he got 30, two.
4 for 36 in a TD.
Touchdown. Gotcha. But so what were your kind of takeaways from them? Again, I did not get a chance to watch any of this. I saw a couple of Corey Davis's big plays. We'll get to Corey Davis in a little bit, but just kind of your overall takeaway from the Titans offense, which again, from what I saw, looked mostly like they were getting stopped by Denver again, which is something we talked about yesterday.
Yeah, so Denver, I think, was keying on A.J. Brown, really trying to watch for that one and trying to work to take out Henry. I had mentioned I thought the outside and the flats would be a little place where they were vulnerable. Henry's best runs came when he was able to break, contain outside and go outside. They had a couple of early screens that were very successful, and they had a couple of play action plays where they were able to sweep over the middle, and I think that's why you saw so much to Humphrey and Davis. Brown, the last, when they were going to try to take the lead, Tannehill just missed a corner route in the end zone that would have been to A.J. Brown. That probably would have propped his stats up. I think he'll have better games. It did seem like the Titans were trying to be more aggressive passing-wise and to spread it around more, maybe trying to get more people involved, because I think, they're not dumb either. They know that the book on them was Derrick Henry is going to pound it to you, and there's only one receiver you should be worried about. They want to kind of change that. Davis made the most of his opportunities. I thought he was very efficient. He made some contested catches. He had a beautiful catch that he registered on the sideline, actually, on the play that took Boye out, where he fought for the ball, drug his feet. He looked pretty good. Can he continue it? I think my biggest question with Corey Davis is we've seen some flashes like this in playoff games or in other spots in the season where he's put up a good game, but it doesn't seem consistent. But some people had wondered, was he going to be in line for that kind of Devontae Parker fantasy zombie breakout? And obviously off to a pretty good start.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited about that for him. On the Broncos side, Drew Lock finishes his QB 26 with 13 points. Melvin Gordon, RB 16 with 12 points. Jerry Jeudy, wide receiver 46 with 9 points. And then Noah Fant, tight end 3 with 19 points. So it did seem like Fant stepped up there with Sutton being out. Again, something we talked about Monday. We kind of expected him to be the one more than Jeudy. Jeudy still did look good, though, from the things that I saw. And then obviously we know that Gordon fumbles the ball at one point. Lindsey comes in and seems to be the guy. Then he gets hurt. Gordon comes back in and kind of finishes out the game. So what was your kind of overall takeaways from the Denver offense and then kind of anything on Lindsey on what's going on with his injury?
Yeah, Lindsey, they haven't given an immediate update. He has some kind of a foot injury. It bears watching. that was kind of a bummer to me. I know a lot of people were like, well, Melvin Gordon ended up really great. He had 15 carries for 78 yards. He had one carry of 25 yards that he managed to break, one where the kind of defense missed. So if you took that away, he had 14 carries for 50 yards, which isn't that incredible. Yeah. Their entire running game wasn't that incredible. I wasn't super excited about the plays. It was a very frustrating game to watch, I thought, at times. Fant was incredible in the first half, and then I didn't see them go to him at all in the second half. They didn't have a lot of second half drives and opportunities. The Titans had a lot of long drives, and the Broncos were responding with some three and outs. Judy was okay. I thought he would be fine. I didn't expect an exceptional game. He had two devastating drops in the second half. I would actually say that was a big factor in them losing. They got a punt with only a few minutes left in the fourth quarter, up by a point, that put them in Titans territory. And Judy was wide open, got hit in stride in the hands. What would have been a first down that would have put them in field goal range and kept the clock going, and just flat dropped it.
So he pulled an Odell.
Yeah, he on an early second half drive, he was coming over the formation wide open and just laid it on the ground on third down too. I think those are things that will come. You got to remember, it's his first professional game. A lot of pressure there in the fourth quarter without a Sutton. You know, Hamler was out last night. There isn't a lot of – I like Tim Patrick as a utility player, and – I want Deshaun Hamilton to develop into something. Yeah. They're really not serious threats. And I think the Titans must have figured out a way to take Fant out of the game, because he just – either that or the play calling, I don't know.
Right.
There were some really great moments. There were some kind of disappointing moments. I think for me, the biggest disappointment I had was – the way Fangio decided to play the last 2 minutes and not take any timeouts and not try to save any time. We didn't get a chance to see if, I mean, Brandon McManus, they just gave him a huge contract. Yeah. He's hit 60 plus yard field goals in Mile High in practice. He's got a huge leg. They didn't even give themselves a chance to try to work it up around midfield and do a Hail Mary kick to win. So that was a little disappointing.
Well, I think some of that is, you know, the new rule. You can carry timeouts over to next week, right? So now if Vic Fangio can bring those timeouts with them, you know, I thought, at least I heard that somewhere. I'm not sure if that's
actually true or not. It may have inspired my tag today.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's unfortunate. You know, I will say that part of me, while I'm never happy to see the Broncos, Lions, and Colts lose, at least we're all commiserating together here this week on the round table, because not one of our teams was able to pull out a win this week. You guys, actually, all three of your games were a lot closer than the Browns game. So at least you have that going for you. You at least had a chance to win. Mine disappeared after, like, the first quarter.
Dennis and I's team both managed to find a way to blow the game at the end of the fourth quarter. So we have solidarity there.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So we are going to focus on waiver wire stuff here. I'm just going to kind of, I went through and pulled a lot of the guys that I've seen. I'm in a bunch of redraft leagues, so some a little bit deeper. I'm in a couple that are, you know, 12 teams, but we have 18 man rosters and everything, and you start multiple flexes. So I went through and pulled a bunch of names that look to be the top guys on the waiver wires, and we're just going to kind of talk about them, how you would rank them, who you would kind of attack if you were sitting here. So we'll start with the QB position. The top guys seem to be Minshew, Joe Burrow, Ryan Tannehill, Derek Carr, and Teddy Bridgewater. So if you're sitting there with, and I'll use one of my teams as an example, I've got Carson Wentz and Baker Mayfield as my quarterbacks in one of these redraft leagues. You know, would you drop Baker and attack one of these guys? And if so, how would you rank those five guys?
You know, it's tough. Of the two of them, Wentz might scare me more because he functionally has no blocking. I don't know if I'm dropping, you know, those two, if I was going for an example. But of the quarterbacks you listed, based on what I've seen, I think Tannehill's never super impressive, but watching him, or doesn't seem super impressive when you're thinking about him in a vacuum. But watching him last night, and, you know, they had a reminder of how efficient he was. He was the top play action passer. That's something that they can do. You know, when I was looking at that list, Carr, too, is another guy I would put in those roles. Both those guys have an incredible running back that is going to be a focal point of the defense that gives you so much when you can play action, and they have a lot of weapons. If I was a Titans fan, I'd feel pretty excited about the way they, you know, spread the ball around and were moving the ball. That game shouldn't have been as close as it was. Steven Gostkowski missed three field goals that were between 42 and 47 and also shanked an extra point. So I would say the Titans had a much better offensive performance than you might think from looking at the score, and that's why Tannehill put up some decent numbers. He is not super exciting, but if you're in Superflex, I think he's going to be a bankable, reliable QB2 that you can put in there every week.
Yeah, especially Superflex, I think I would go after Tannehill, Carr, and Minshew. I mean, Minshew just seems to find ways to get it done on the football field and for fantasy football. I think the last two, it would probably be Burrow for me a little bit more over Bridgewater. But then even again, Bridgewater put up a lot of points in that one too. Although Oakland's defense probably a little bit worse than Vegas. So, I mean, I guess you could probably flip flop those two, but I'm with you. Tannehill and Carr are really intriguing to me. And as much as I hate to say this, while I'll agree that I think Baker's upside might be a little bit more, I think all of those guys have safer floors, which is why I kind of might take one of those guys over Baker. Just because the other thing with Wentz, and just my example specifically, Wentz also gets injured a lot as well. So I might have to end up relying on someone, and I'm not sure right now I want to rely on Baker as my starting quarterback if Wentz goes down with an injury.
You know, I think the other reason that I tended towards Tannehill and Carr is they're less volatile.
Yeah.
You know, rookie quarterback in Burrow, he's going to have some super high highs, but we all expect he's going to have some low lows, especially when you're playing a defense like Pittsburgh twice or Baltimore twice. To me, Minshew, I thought he played very efficient. He's got a ton of heart. We don't know how much elite talent Jacksonville has. They're not going to get to play a middling Colts team every week.
Yeah.
And that's my same fear with Bridgewater. That team's very much a work in progress, especially defensively, trying to get things done. You know, so I think that's what separates to me Tannehill, and then probably Carr would be the one and two in that list for me. The volatility of going below.
Yeah, and like I said, and Minshew and Bridgewater, for me, the reason I would keep them still below Tannehill and Carr, like you have them, but they would be close for maybe not. I think for me, Tannehill is the clear break for me, and then I think it's Carr, and I think Minshew and Bridgewater are close to Carr, because while I agree both their defenses are bad, I think that also helps get them the volume and passing attempts that even if they're not having great days, they're going to be passing the ball so much, they get you those. Like, I don't want to compare Minshew and Bortles because I think Minshew is better than Bortles, but Bortles would be that guy where, like, the first two halves, you've got 6 points from him, and then you go look at the end of the game, and he got you 42 because all of a sudden they threw it 30 times in the second half of the game, and he somehow got you three touchdowns and ran for one. So that's kind of what I see from those two. Now, Bridgewater's not getting you rushing. Minshew probably could. I think Tannehill's obviously going to give you the most rushing upside out of all those guys.
Minshew is the guy I would go to if I was looking to go big or go home.
Gotcha.
I think there are going to be, I mean, we saw it last year. There's Minshew mania, and then there's, you know, Minshew defladia.
Yeah. You know? There you go. We got to make that a thing now. All right. So running backs, this one's a little bit more interesting. So the top guys on the waiver wire right now, Nyheim Hines, Benny Snell, Malcolm Brown, Adrian Peterson, James Robinson, Jerick McKinnon, Frank Gore, and Josh Adams. I'm going to kind of separate the last two out because that's going to be more of a Jets thing. I posted this on Twitter and I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. I'm not someone who's going to go all in on Nyheim Hines. I'm a little worried that everybody is comparing him. I literally saw people making this exact thing on Twitter saying, hey, Nyheim Zekler is going to be the guy that you need to get on your waiver wires this week because he is going to be the next Austin Eckler just because Phillip Rivers is his quarterback. That's just not the right comparison to make. I think he is going to have that. I think a lot of that was game script, but the fact that Taylor got six catches, three of which happened while Mac was still in the game before Mac got hurt, clearly showed to me that they wanted Taylor to be involved in the offense. Now Mack is unfortunately out. Taylor can catch the ball. I do think Hines has a role. I do not see him being an Austin Ekeler, though. I do think that this is going to be mostly Jonathan Taylor. So I do think Hines holds his own value, and I could see him finishing as like a low-end RB2 this year just based on the amount of as I think the Colts are going to be behind a lot. I don't see a lot of games where they're going to be up and force-feeding Taylor to keep them up. I do think Hines kind of brings in some probably lower-tier RB2 value, but I don't see him being the best out of this. Like, if I had to rank these guys for me, I think it'd be – I think I'd go Malcolm Brown as the number one. He looked the best out of all of them. Snell is close, but we don't know what's going to happen with Connor, and that's going to be kind of the next big thing to talk about is – we know Connor got hurt. We don't know if he's going to be out very much longer. If you know Connor's going to be out, then I think you've got to throw Snell right up there at the top two because Snell looked good. But how are you kind of attacking these top three guys? Because I think it's those three, then a tier break, you get some of those other guys. You might even be able to throw James Robinson up there, so you can if you want. But just kind of give me how you would attack your free agency or fab if you're in free agent bid system for these running backs on the waiver wire for most people's process tomorrow morning. So.
Yeah, and I'm kind of with you. I think Hines will have a role, and if you're looking for somebody who you can throw in, especially in PPR, as a flex or something like that, he's definitely worth picking up. He should be owned everywhere, especially with what happened to Marlon Mack. But my greatest fear, if you were thinking about spending like 80% of your fab budget, is we've seen his best game. It's possible, you know, because he had two touchdowns in there, 27 points. You know, I don't think he's going to rise up and to be in the top five, top 10, yeah. You know, very much this season. You could, you know, I've seen people make that same argument about Malcolm Brown. I would say the difference there is while there was draft capital and most people expected Taylor to be kind of a primary player at some point, you know, maybe not week one because he's a rookie, and his coach has come out and said, Taylor's our guy. He's going to be our main rusher. There's been a lot of uncertainty about the Rams. You know, nothing that Sean McVay has said indicates that he loves Cam Akers or thinks Daryl Henderson's the guy. Malcolm Brown has consistently was a guy that came in and got a lot of work when Gurley was unavailable. So I think it makes sense. He's a veteran in that system who has the respect of his coach. And if you just had the eye test going against the same defense with the same offense, he looked much better.
Yeah.
He looked much more comfortable. Now, is it possible that by the end of the season, the roles even out or even flip a little bit? Yeah, that's possible. But I think right now, if I'm looking for somebody that I can start with upside because the running back position has just been savaged. I don't know about you, but I woke up this morning in a few teams where I thought, man, I got four or five guys, I'm in good shape. And now I got like one and a half guys. And I'm like, okay, this did not work out. And that's where I kind of fall with Snell. Snell looked good. Did he look good because he's taking that job or because Connor wasn't in there? Because many of us, most of us, thought Connor was going to be a top 10 running back for the same reason that Snell looked good, because that Giants defense is not incredible. He is somebody that, you know, if you own James Connor and you don't have Snell and he's on the waiver wire, you should do everything in humanly possible to go get him, because that's the guy I would target the most. But if you're just trying to pick up a running back, I'm more interested in Malcolm Brown and Adrian Peterson. We talked about it. You know, I think Detroit is much like that New England tree he came off of. They want a guy who's going to be a grinder right now. That's not going to be Swift, and it certainly looks like it's not going to be Kerryon Johnson. You know, Adrian Peterson is not a super sexy name in 2020, but all he does is grind out yards. You know, when you picked him up when he was with Washington last year, he probably held you steady, helped you win some weeks, because he's not going to give you 25 points, but he's probably going to give you between 6 and 12 points steadily, and maybe more if he gets a touchdown.
Yeah, I don't think Peterson is a bad call either. I went in and looked at that a little bit more, and I know you kind of mentioned this yesterday because I was a little bit worried about what might happen with Swift. I didn't realize that Swift was out on the field more than the other two as well, more than both of them combined. So they clearly had Swift in their game plan yesterday. I guess I'm a little bit luckier on my running back situation. I'm someone who took Jonathan Taylor in as many places as I could when it came to redraft. So right now I'm looking a lot better because I have that. But I do have some teams where I'm not looking great. And so I'm with you. I think Malcolm Brown is the guy. Benny Snell is another guy I'm targeting. Like if you're sitting, if you're not sitting one, you're obviously like, I don't think you're going to get Malcolm Brown. I think Malcolm Brown's likely going to be one of the top two off him. And I think a lot of people are going to go after Hines again. Neither one of us are suggesting. I still think he should be owned, like you said, but he's not. If I have one, two, or three, for me, it's probably Brown, Snell, then Hines, Peterson. Like I could see you taking Hines over Peterson. I wouldn't argue that, especially in PPR, because you're going to get those PPR points where while Peterson caught three passes on Sunday, I don't see that continuing. At least he can probably catch three, but not as much as Hines is likely going to get every single week.
Well, and that's when you get past those four.
Yeah.
To me, you're taking more shots. I have James Robinson that I rostered in a few spaces when I had some injuries and had some space. You know, I think we kind of saw what we're going to see from him. I would say his ceiling is probably 8 to 10 points a week. I don't think they're going to have a robust offense. Jerick McKinnon was a great comeback story, but we talked about yesterday, Tevin Coleman was kind of held out because the air quality and because it was a health risk for him. But when he mixes back in, barring an injury to either Mostert or Coleman, what is McKinnon's rep share? You know, and so to me, those are more. All those guys, you can make a case for them being owned. It depends on what you're trying to go for waivers. If you really need to patch a running back hole, I would try to get one of those top four guys we mentioned first.
Yeah, so on that next group here, which I will throw Gore and Adams in here because it does look like we know for sure Bell is going to be out for a couple weeks.
I would
avoid
all the Jets.
I agree with you. I would, and that's what I'm going to say. I mean, you can, if I had to pick one of those two, I'm going to go Josh Adams. I did like him coming out of Notre Dame. He's been here and there. I just think he gives you a little more upside than Frank Gore. Now, Frank Gore is probably going to be the one who gets you those touchdowns because I think he'll be the goal line back, but Adams brings you a little bit more. I'm with you on I would avoid him altogether.
P. Ryan is tracking to play again too, and he's a guy that they drafted
that
a lot of us liked, and so that makes him even more unknown. Was Josh Adams had a bigger role because P. Ryan wasn't available? Does it end up being P. Ryan and Gore? You sink money into that. Frank Gore... He's going to give you 12 points when you have him on the bench, and he's going to give you 2.5 points the week that you're desperate enough to start him.
Yeah, so I was going to bring up P. Ryan as like a sleeper one. Now, I could be wrong, so I don't. You may be able to correct me on this. I heard yesterday that they were saying he may not be able to play till week 3 or 4. So that's kind of why I was going to throw him on as a dart throw guy.
Possible. He has a projection now, and he's no longer – he got upgraded to questionable.
Okay, so for me then, I would attack – McKinnon and P. Ryan as those late end guys that I would try and grab, and McKinnon because he did look good as we talked about Sunday, and you obviously do have Coleman coming back, but the one thing, and you can say this about McKinnon as well, McKinnon, Coleman, and Mostert all have very lengthy injury histories, and so I hate to say it this way, but I almost feel like at some point, Coleman or Mostert might go down for a couple of weeks, and then that's going to lead McKinnon to getting more work. I would love to have a share in that San Francisco backfield, especially if it is Mostert, because I think if Mostert goes down, you're going to see more of a 50-50 split between Coleman and McKinnon. Then if you see Coleman go down, I still think it's a 70-30. Now McKinnon's still getting that 30, but I still think Mostert's going to get a majority of that. So he's not I would take McKinnon over Gore and Adams, but I'd probably take P. Ryan over McKinnon, especially if he is projected to play, because as you mentioned, the Jets drafted him. There's a lot of people who thought he was going to be the guy next year because it looked like they were going to try and move on from Bell as soon as possible.
But I would completely fade the Jets offense this week because they are hosting what figures to be an incredibly angry 49ers team. So not a good matchup or not a good team. Is it, we are officially on the how many games is Adam Gase left as coach of the Jets? Watch, there was a lot of people that thought that he's going to go during the season. Yeah. Very little about that opening week performance suggests that he's made demonstrable improvement.
All right, so for receiving options, I just put receiving options because I think there's really two tight ends. I forgot to put one of them on here, but there's two tight ends that I think are fairly available, which was kind of surprising to me. I think both are interesting. So for me, the top guys, and I'll put the tight ends in here as well, Paris Campbell, Anthony Miller, Dallas Goedert, and O.J. Howard. Those are kind of my top four options. All the entire list here, Scotty Miller, Anthony Miller, Paris Campbell, Dallas Goedert, O.J. Howard, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, Alan Lazard, Russell Gage, and Laviska Shenault. The reason I lean Goedert and, or I put Goedert and Howard up there, we do know that the tight end position is very weak. Both of those guys seem to be, especially Goedert, I know a lot of that probably has to do with the amount of injuries they had, but I do think that also leans into because of how bad their offensive line is. Wentz targets those guys a lot, and I think they're going to target them even more because Rager and DeSean Jackson are guys that have they use their speed to get open down the field. And if Wentz doesn't have time to wait and hold the ball, he's going to hit those two tight ends. Now, obviously, I don't expect Goedert to be what he was last week, but he was a guy that you could start almost every single week last year as well. That, you know, there were weeks you were going to get 6 points from him, but then you get the 20 points from him like you got this past week. So I do really like Goedert this week. I do like Paris Campbell as well. We've kind of talked about him a little bit yesterday and off stream in our chat because we're all kind of big fans of his. You know, we talked about yesterday Anthony Miller and Scotty Miller, two guys I kind of want to see a little bit more from. But chances are, if you don't get them this week, you're not going to get them because someone's probably going to go in on them this week. I want to save MVS, Lazard, Gage, and Shenault for a conversation here in a minute because I think those other guys are more pressing. So how would you kind of attack those top guys?
Well, to me, it's unconscionable that Goedert is known if he's not owned in your league. He was a tight end one.
I agree. So I went and looked. He's got a 65% ownership in ESPN and Yahoo. So, again, he's owned mostly, but there's still – I went in three of my redraft leagues, two on Yahoo, and, again, both of these 12-team, 18-round drafts. We have 18-man rosters. He was available in both of them.
Yeah, and if you were somebody that, you know, wanted to make your stand on, like, an Ian Thomas or a Hayden Hurst or something, go get Dallas Goedert.
Hayden Hurst. Well, I'm going Goedert if I can get him. That's who I'm targeting this week.
Hurst may bounce back. You know, yeah. People were still in love with Austin Hooper. Go get Dallas Goedert. Yeah. You know, then you have a couple of options, but Goedert to me should be owned. And then beyond that, I'm with you. Paris Campbell, we saw in week one what we had thought we were getting when he got drafted. A lot of us were high on him going to that team in that location. Finally looks like he's maybe getting into it a little bit. You would ideally like to see it again, but I think the opportunity was going to be there for one of those guys. He looked like he had a good rapport with Rivers. So he would be the top target for me of those receivers. Then I would go Anthony Miller, a guy who also has a lot of talent. His questions have more been the volume of his offense and whether his quarterback's going to make an effort to get him the ball. I thought that looked promising. He's definitely worth a stash. And then Scotty Miller, you know, I'd say his ceiling is what we kind of saw on Sunday. He's probably like the 10 to 12 point guy, but he could also be the 5 to 6 point guy. If it wasn't Tom Brady, I would not even be advocating going and getting him with that lineup. Howard's tough to tell. For me, you know, how much was Evans being out and Gronk working himself into game shape a factor here? I don't think they made enough of an effort to feature him with all the other options and that for me to feel good about him as a starter. If you're looking to stash somebody who might have some upside, great. But if you're saying, I need a tight end I can start right now, I would think there's probably guys like Logan Thomas.
He's one I forgot to put on there.
That are on the waiver wire that I would target more for that.
So where do you have – so you would put Logan Thomas above O.J. Howard? He was the one I left off there. I knew I left somebody off.
Yeah, there was a lot of hype that Logan Thomas was going to be the guy. It was tough to tell, you know, what is that offense going to be like. But if you think about Ron Rivera and Scott Turner and the way they ran in Carolina, tight end was always a big part of what they were going to do. And he looked like he had good rapport with Haskins, tight end and pass catching running back, can be a young quarterback's best friend. That's why a lot of people were hype on potentially what Antonio Gibson could give you. So I think with that good performance from Thomas, you know, he's somebody I would have more faith in than Howard, not because he's more talented, but, you know, Tampa Bay has an embarrassment of riches all over the field. Yeah. And it's going to be harder. You know, the greatest thing in Washington is they have Terry McLaurin and then a lot of questions and somebody who can kind of emerge. We wondered, you know, is it going to be Steve Sims in the passing game? Is it going to be one of these other receivers? Is it going to be a Logan Thomas? Is it going to be Gibson? Week one, it looks like Logan Thomas is trying to establish himself in that pecking order, and there was a void to be filled.
So this next group here are all kind of, I don't want to say dart throws, but lower end guys for me. MVS, Allen Lazard, Russell Gage, and LaVisca Chenault. We talked a little bit about Chenault yesterday. You know, you mentioned that it seems like Doug Marrone has been saying now all offseason they want to build around this young core and you know, allow these guys to play. Chenault looks to be the guy opposite of Chark here, and he's the guy that they will use in the backfield as well. So he brings a little bit of versatility, brings you kind of that option to get more than just points in the receiving game. You know, Russell Gage, I do think, is kind of a product of what happened Sunday. We had Matt Ryan throw for 350 yards. All three wide receivers went over. You know, we talked about it a little bit yesterday as well. Sorry, 400. Yeah, is that you know, was Russell Gage the reason why Hurst didn't blow up? You know, we were kind of talking about that. Lazard and MVS, it's not really close to me. And so I know MVS had a good game, and I was looking at this earlier. I wanted to pull it up so I could make sure I got this right. The snap counts for yesterday, have you seen this for the Green Bay Packers?
No, I didn't look.
Okay, so Devontae Adams was out there on 70 of the 78 snaps. Not surprising. He's the one. Everybody loves him. Allen Lazard was out there on 68 of them, so he only took off 10 snaps. MVS was out there for 42. So that kind of makes me think that Lazard is the for sure second guy. We know that I watched an interview that Rodgers gave yesterday after the game, and he even said this to the reporters, which I kind of thought was funny because Rodgers does seem like the guy who definitely listens to what the news and media says about him. And he said, "You guys know me. You know how much I believe and trust in my players. I've really built that trust with Lazard, and that's why I like throwing the ball to him." And we've talked about that as a fantasy group, right? Like, we've always brought up you have to build that trust, or Rodgers has to trust you before he'll go throw you the ball. He has built up MVS as well, as Dennis has brought up. Dennis is big on MVS. I kind of feel like, though, with Lazard being out there as much as he is, not only shows Rodgers likes him, but the coaching staff likes him more. 68 out of 78 snaps is a lot. And again, it's just week one. Maybe that shifts and there's more of a split, but for 68 on Allen Lazard and 42 for Marquez Valdes-Scantling, I think speaks clearly to me that, at least in the coaching staff's mind, it's obviously Adams, but then Lazard, and even a little bit of a drop before you get to MVS. So kind of your thoughts on those two, and then how would you attack Russell Gage and Chenault? Do you have any interest in either one of those guys?
So I think Chenault, for me, has a lot of upside, but he's going to be very boom-bust. I think Jacksonville is going to be boom-bust. I think that offense is going to be boom-bust. So, you know, like, if Chenault doesn't score a touchdown, he's in the 6-7 point range. Mm-hmm. So that's what you have to think. You know, can I survive with the guy I'm slotting out there getting me 3 to 5 points, or do I need more than that? You know, and there's going to be times where you need to throw in a Hail Mary player. He seems like the kind of guy that's capable of that. Gage, to me, is a great injury hedge against Julio or Ridley if one of them was to go down. I think we see that Gage could be, you know, a valuable every week starter. I think his bigger day on Sunday, as we talked about, was a little bit of, you have Julio, then yeah, Ridley's going to be there as well. There's always going to be a third, fourth, fifth guy. Hurst wasn't a big part of the game plan. Gurley got a little bit early, but then they got down, so they were just checking it, and Gage ended up benefiting from that. I don't think you can count on that. I actually think, as we talked about, Hurst will probably get stronger as you go through the season. him getting to be a primary, him getting to learn the offense and building rapport with his quarterback. Todd Gurley is going to have games where they run a lot or they're throwing to him, and that's good matchups. So I don't think Gage is particularly reliable. I get what you're saying with the Green Bay receivers.
Yeah.
The smart thing probably is to go Lazard, but I'm going to channel my inner Dennis and tell you that I have faced this quandary when I was looking at my own waivers, and I put in some serious high dollar claims for MVS. And let me tell you, physically, I was watching and thinking about what Dennis said, that he's a matchup nightmare. And I think the way the Packers are looking to play right now, they have the running game they can lean on. They have Aaron Jones. They have Devontae Adams, who's an absolute beast. Lazard is a fine complimentary receiver that they can go to. When they were putting MVS out there, they were putting him in different spots and looking for some terrible matchups and bombing over the top. It's not always going to happen.
Yeah.
Definitely a huge boom bust risk. But to me, he's the guy that could give you 40 points in a week.
So would you say then, I guess, with those is more of a, you think Lazard has the safer floor, but then MVS clearly has the higher ceiling?
Yes. Gotcha. But I think both of them could have a very low floor. I mean,
right.
The Vikings didn't look great.
Yeah. Yeah. That is very true.
They didn't look great though.
Yeah, that was, yeah, which is what we talked about. Again, me and you had Devontae Adams as our wide receiver ones, even after the Thursday night game came out, because we were like, yeah, this is just, it's a horrible secondary. So, all right, so we have talked about trying to keep these episodes a little bit shorter here, so we're about done. I just wanted to go through and talk about our rankings. Again, we do these in the Discord channel. I wanted to keep this kind of as transparent as possible, so call ourselves out on some of the mistakes here. I did leave some of the injury stuff off. There's no way we could have known that the James Conners or Marlon Max could have got hurt, so I didn't feel fair knocking us for those, because they might have been good in the spot that we had them had they not gotten injured. So some of our biggest misses on the week, all three of us missed on Drew Brees, Dak Prescott, and Carson Wentz. Just none of them produced it. We all had them in our top 10, which none of them finished there. You know, again, it's going to happen. What I try to do, just so people know, if you've looked at it, I gave like a 3 to 5 cushion. I mean, I feel like if you're within 3 to 5 ranking spots, that's kind of fair. It's not that bad. These are guys that we all missed by more than that. We were all, Matt, you had the most, like, almost dead on with Joe Burrow, Tannehill, and Daniel Jones. You were almost dead on with all three of those things. Burrow was right on, and then Jones and Tannehill were, like, by off by a spot. So you kind of nailed those, like, almost on the head. We also missed on all three of us, although you two were both higher. Aaron Rodgers, we all had him outside of our top 14. He finished very high. Kirk Cousins, Minshew, and Teddy Bridgewater were the other ones. We were all a lot lower on those three. They all had great. Kirk Cousins finished the lowest out of those three. But
you made fun of me for having Cousins up like
I know
QB2. You're like,
yeah,
why do you love Kirk Cousins? I'm like, what? Yep. I think he's going to have to throw in this game.
Yeah, it was
that both defenses were going to take a nap.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, he was one of the big ones. So on running back here, our biggest misses, all three of us, Saquon. I feel like everybody, I don't think anybody in the industry predicted him to get less than 10 points. So, but, you know, again, we're trying to be transparent.
And him, and you have Saquon Barkley as an RB1 in your ranks. It was a petty thing because, yeah. I mean, he's a generational talent.
Yeah, exactly.
Not a guy you're going by matchups usually.
Yeah. Joe Mixon and Eckler with the other two. But again, same thing. They were going to be in your lineups. It was just one of those weird things. I'm not, like I said, I'm not going to knock anybody for the James Conner thing because he got hurt. I actually thought it was very interesting. We were all pretty close in on Derrick Henry. I think I had him off by 4 spots. You almost had him dead on. Dennis had him off by 2. So we did kind of all come in right there. I was obviously wrong on Josh Jacobs. I had him down at 11. You had him at was it you had him at 4, Dennis had him at 3. So, I mean, you two were right there. And I mean, he finished at 1, but still, you guys had him right there pretty close. We were all off on Chubb and Mark Ingram. That was kind of a weird thing, I think, for all of us. And
that's going to bear some thinking going forward because.
Oh, yeah.
There was a thing with Baltimore that was.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm working on my quarterback and running back ranks here a little bit before we started recording, and I'm struggling on figuring out where to put Mark Ingram right now because I'm like, I don't know what to think.
50.
I didn't. It's funny. I mean, we all missed on Bell to begin with. He got injured though, but I don't.
I don't know that he would have been able to hit that RB2.
Well, we had him. We had him all low RB2. So but I'm with you. I don't know. It may have been the catches, but I think I was Dennis was the highest. No, you both had him at 18. I had him at 20. So we all had him low end RB2. We weren't that high on him. The other guys, for us, the big one was Raheem Mostert and Malcolm Brown. And again, I don't know. I did put Nyheim Hines on here as well. Same thing. I kind of feel like Nyheim Hines was a product of Marlon Mack getting hurt. So I don't think it's fair to say we missed on him, but well, technically.
And I was going to put Hines down near the end. It was really hard.
You ranked him. You had him ranked. Yeah. I was the only one who didn't have him ranked out of the three of us.
When we were going through, there was a few of these committees that it was really hard to get a feel for them based on purely coach speak, not seeing anybody run.
Yeah.
I feel like week one was a crapshoot a little bit in that way. The Rams, the Colts, Baltimore. I mean, there's so many group committees. I think Mostert gets a big bump because he caught a 76-yard pass for a touchdown, which you don't expect. Yeah. And also, I don't think we realized until late that Tevin Coleman was going to be a scratch because of the air quality concerns. So, I mean, there are a few things. It's an imperfect science, you know, trying to figure out. You get this. I feel like everybody went in kind of to week one with some of their preconceived things that you held on to that you had going into training camp because we actually didn't have any footage or anything concrete to make you rethink that. And now we have some game footage. I feel like we'll all get a little bit better knowing a little bit more clarity of what these teams are going to do.
Yeah, but again, I agree with you on that. I feel like we will be a little bit better. Again, it's not much. I mean, when you really go through here and look, you're looking at 5-6 players. We ranked 50 running backs. Like, in my opinion, missing out on 5 or 6 running backs is not that bad. And some of these guys, again, as you just mentioned, Raheem Mostert, like, we all still had him ranked high. We just didn't expect him to finish as a top 10 back, just based on we thought it'd be a little bit more of a committee. I did want to throw a little bit of shade. I know Dennis will listen to this eventually. He did have Jonathan Taylor ranked at 25. I'm just saying me and Matt both had him ranked right near the top 20. He finished as RB15. I know that was probably the Marlon Mack thing.
I thought I had 17.
You had him at 20. You dropped him down a little bit. You had him and Mack pretty close together. I kept him high. I kept him at I had him at 18. So it wasn't that much. I had him at 18 and then Marlon Mack at 22. So I was still kind of close together. But we had separated him out. But I just thought it was funny that, you know, he came in as 15. You finished him at, you had him at 20. I had him at 18. So we were kind of close on that. But those are really the big ones there. Again, I'm not counting Phillip Lindsay because he got hurt. We did have him kind of high. Then the wide receivers to finish it off, Matt, you had the most like really close on. The only guys you really kind of missed on, Michael Thomas, which nobody expected. Darius Slayton, same thing. We all missed on Darius Slayton and Michael Thomas as well. But then the only other big glaring one, which I'm only putting this on there because I touted him and he almost nailed it right on the spot, was DK Metcalf. You guys both had Lockett higher. DK Metcalf had that huge week. But I also missed on Allen Robinson, DJ Chark, AJ Brown, Juju Smith-Schuster, and Preston Williams. I had Preston Williams pretty high. He did not produce for me at all. And then same with Dennis. Dennis missed out on a couple guys here. DJ Moore, Calvin Ridley, DK Metcalf, Deontay Johnson, Anthony Miller, Damir Bird, and then, like I said, we all missed out on Darius Slayton. So not overall bad, I don't think. He did rank Damir Bird. That's why I put him on here as wide receiver 37. So, you know, yeah, I know.
New England now?
Yeah. He's on New England, yeah. Hey, you know, you gotta mix it up. What if he would have finished as like 30, Dennis would have been able to claim the victory on that one. But yeah, he had Damir Bird on there. But I mean, we all had, I had Steven Sims on there. I don't even know if Steven Sims caught a ball. So once you get down to like that 50 range.
I was thinking about putting Steven Sims down at the bottom. I just wasn't sure what the volume of passing would be for Washington.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, we all had, I don't remember if you had a guy on there that didn't do much. I mean, I'll give you and Dennis this. You both ranked Tim Patrick, and he put up like 7 points or 8 points, I think, in that game. So.
I ranked Tim Patrick after we pulled Sutton.
Oh, gotcha. I still had Sutton ranked.
When we first did our pass, when I had Sutton ranked, he was the only Bronco receiver I had ranked. When he came out, I added Patrick and Judy down in the 40 to 60 range because I thought both would end up getting passes, but neither would be spectacular, which I think Judy ended up right around 46. That was a disparity I had. Yeah. I know with a couple of people who thought, well, Judy's going to be an easy wide receiver too. It's hard your first game. Yep. when you had no preseason, when you got none of that. So
no, I hear you. I was talking with some people about that Monday night while the Steelers game was going on. There were people talking about, hey, I've got a – they had moved, like, Cortland Sutton to their flex spot and not knowing if he was going to be out. And they're like, well, who do you think is going to have the bigger game, Judy or Fant? And I was like, it's going to be Fant. Like, he already had that rapport with Locke. Even if they had a regular preseason, I still would have gone Fant because they already had that rapport. He stepped up last year. So, yeah, I'm with you. I'm interested to see what you – because he looked better than I thought he was going to look in that game against a good Titans defense as well. So yeah. I'm interested to see what he does moving forward. But that'll do it for us today. We'll be back on Thursday to preview a supposed football game. The battle for Ohio. Yeah, my man, I don't know if it's going to be much of a battle, but we do have a football game on Thursday. So you'll see me, Matt, probably Tony back on Thursday to preview that game, talk about any news. We obviously have a lot of injury stuff still out there, kind of no confirmed stuff. So we'll update you guys with any injury news that comes our way. So we will see you guys again on Thursday.
Prepare for glory! I don't know if you got your popcorn ready. Do you got your popcorn ready?
I came out the womb, I was ready.
And he's hit the end zone for an unbelievable touchdown.
I would be honored.
Throw it up above his head. They can't jump with me. Golly.
Oh, they tackle him at the 40-yard line.
Who can make a play? I can. Who can make a play? I can.